content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now it's time to break the cover on a brand new issue of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina, this one for May 2022, of course. We're starting a week late for reasons which are not important, but we will have four readings this month. And I am telling you, if you love hamburgers, you would love this cover. This is the burger issue. And there between two buns are, I would have to say, two quarter-pound hamburgers smothered in cheese, onions and bacon on the bottom, and lettuce and tomato on the top. And for you vegetarians, just think of them as great big vegan burgers or vegetable burgers or whatever name will suit you. But this looks fantastic. So we're going to read about burgers next week, I'm sure. But for this week, we're going to start with the introduction from Elizabeth, by Elizabeth Hudson, our editor-in-chief. And this one's called, suitably enough, The Special Sauce. You might think they're all the same. Hamburgers, as common on any North Carolina menu as a barbecue sandwich, as sweet tea, or a fizzy Mountain Pepsi. Nothing special, you might think. A plain bun softened by the heat of a steamer. A patty smashed on a flat top with melted American cheese. Lettuce, tomato, mayonnaise, chili, slaw, and mustard. Have I had a hamburger in all 100 counties? Close, I'd say. My first one ever at 5 or 6 years old in Asheboro, of course, my hometown. On Saturdays, my grandmother and I would walk from her house across from the library where we'd spent our morning to Little Castle on Sunset Avenue, a small restaurant with a few booths against the wall and a calendar hanging behind the counter, its paper bronzed with grease splatters from the open grill. Later, there was Ray's Kingsburger, where we drive after a day at the swimming pool, the upswept, triangle-shaped peak of Ray's roof rising like a steeple, a mecca for burgers. We went to Golden Waffle for the master burger plate. Two patties at a Brown Gardener in Greensboro for a burger with an orangeade. And when I got tired of the cafeteria food during my first year at Appalachian State University and wanted nothing more than to be back home, I'd trek from my dorm on the hill down to King Street for a burger at the counter of Boone Drug. I'd ease into one of those yellow vinyl swivel stools and listen to the patties sizzling on the grill, the spatula scraping against the flat top, and I'd feel better. My dad always said, order the burger at any restaurant, believing that if they could get that right, they'd get everything right. In his sandwich shop, where I'd twirl on the swivel stools and watch him flatten burgers on the griddle, he'd sometimes let me lean over the counter and press the lever on the Fresh-O-Matic bun steamer, a gentle whoosh of warm air as comforting as a sigh. And maybe it was because he cooked them all day, but we never had burgers at home. Ground beef was for meatloaf, for spaghetti sauce, for chili beans. At my grandmother's, we ate country-style steak and buttermilk biscuits, but she never made hamburgers either. Those were the weekend treats, foods we went out on for a sunlit afternoon after a day of doing nothing, which is to say, after a perfect day. I think I've been chasing those burgers that I remember, the ones that remind me of those perfect days, all over North Carolina. I found them at Second Street Lunch in Roanoke Rapids, at Mamie's Drive-In at Second Street Lunch in Roanoke Rapids, at Mamie's Drive-In in Laurel Hill, a double enjoyed outside on a picnic table. At Johnson's in Siler City, where the cooks pile on slabs of Velveeta. At Fat Andy's in Southport, where all the way, wrapped in tinfoil and scarfed down under a pine tree. At Miller's in Moxville, a burger dressed with pimento cheese. At Duke's in Monroe, loaded with slaw. Yes, you can get a burger anywhere in North Carolina, but places like these are time machines delivering something extra special, more than lettuce, tomato, mayonnaise, chili, slaw, and mustard. That keeps us coming back. Let's see how I'm doing at getting this music coming out. There we are. A little bit of a delay today. Well, if you're as old as I am, you certainly remember that sound, Glenn Miller and his orchestra. We'll play a little bit of that in the background as we talk about some hamburgers. In the burger issue, the... trying to find the photo essays. And I'm... there we go. Got on the wrong page. North Carolina in Neon is the subject. Next week we'll be doing all of the hamburger stories. Add electricity to a tube of neon gas and magic happens. Today, most of the neon signs that once illuminated motels, theaters, and restaurants across the state have been replaced by modern displays. But a few glowing examples of this nostalgic art form are still lovingly preserved as icons of a bygone era. I didn't realize it when I picked out the Glenn Miller for today, but I guess they kind of go together, don't they? This is written by Rebecca Woltz. The North Carolina in Neon is actually done either for real in neon or some sort of a photo effect that shows us that and an outline of the state of North Carolina as if it were done with a neon sign. On the right-hand side of the page, it's sunset. The sun has dipped below the high horizon, and we are clearly, if you live around here, looking at the downtown Durham, because there's the Lucky Strike Tower and the Lucky Strike Smoke Stack, and the Old Bull sign is done in neon. And it's a little bit of a time effect here taken as we see the red taillights of cars. There's a solid red stream on the street because of the time exposure. And it says installed in 2008, the Old Bull sign on the American Tobacco campus in Durham was designed with a vintage Art Deco look. But the burly bovine is a replica of an advertisement that's older still. The Bull Durham icon, which was printed on tobacco packaging shortly after the Civil War. How about making the glow? Glass, G-L-A-S, in Raleigh. Richard Marvel is a tube bender at Glass, a neon studio at Dock 1053 near Raleigh's Five Points. There I took a one-day course in how to bend glass and make a neon sign. Your open sign will always be neon, Marvel said, as he demonstrated the machines that neon artists use to fill and electrify tubes after they've bent them into shape. The red cuts through the dark. Argon, another gas commonly used in neon art, glows bluish, and the additional colors come from colored glass or phosphorescent coatings in the tubes. Apart from being a business that creates signs and art, and that teaches people like me how to do the same, Glass is something of a found neon museum. Inside, hundreds of vintage signs glow along its brick walls. A white Food Lion, a green and red 1920s Bonx Cleaners, a green Fidelity, and big red Eat and No Parking signs. We must have this thing on repeat over here. It's playing the same song again. So we will try to move forward. Let's go push this button, and we'll see what comes up. Okay, you can't avoid letting out an open-mouth, breathy oh about those ready and no parking signs. Beyond the walls of glass, neon signs, both old and new, shine from the Blue Ridge Mountains to the Outer Banks. Our family once stayed at the Mountaineer Inn in Asheville specifically because of its astonishing, gigantic neon hillbilly, which manages somehow to be both ridiculous and inoffensive. More recently, Durham added an enormous bright red neon bull to the American Tobacco campus during its 21st century renovation. The first neon sign in the United States glowed in the early 1920s, probably in New York or California. In 1949, Raymond Chandler's detective Philip Marlowe gazed in wonder. There ought to be a monument to the man who invented neon lights. There's a boy who really made something out of nothing. Almost true. The French scientist first noticed a glow from mercury vapor in a barometer tube in 1675. It wasn't until 1898, though, that British scientists discovered neon, which you can find in our atmosphere at the rate of one particle per 65,000. Something out of nothing, indeed. With the invention of vacuum tubes, researchers started filling them with various gases and seeing what happened if they zapped them with electrical current. One scientist found that neon glowed a delightful red, and he displayed it in Paris in 1910. The blaze of crimson light from the tube told its own story and was a sight to dwell upon and never forget, said one of neon's discoverers. I remember my first neon in front of a red and green sign at a Chinese restaurant when I was a little kid. You probably recall one of your own. Nate Schaefer, Glasses founder and presiding artist, does. When he was 13, he visited his sister, who lived in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and saw a bar, La Rose Rouge, with a fantastic neon rose above the entryway. I was blown away by it, he says, and that's when I figured it out. Looking carefully at it, oh, those pieces had to be made by somebody. He went on to make understanding and mastering neon art the focus of his life. Schaefer learned the very basics as a student at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and started his first studio when he graduated in the 1980s. He's gone up and down with the craft. Thousands of neon workers lost their jobs around 2000 when a lot of neon production work moved to Asia. Others lost work as the combined results of the 2008 financial crisis and the emergence of LEDs, which some compare to neon. Don't kid yourself. Neon is neon. Nothing else creates that These days, glass never lacks for work. Shops and restaurants, clubs, events, and collectors all clamor for neon. Just the same, Schaefer estimates that there are now only about 350 full-time neon glass workers in the United States. There are more plumbers in Wake County than neon workers in the country, he says. Partially to resupply that worker base, but mostly just because neon signs are cool, Glass offers courses, a 6-session class that allows folks to design and create a big, complex sign, and a 1-day diet class in which students choose a simple design, learn basic bending, and complete the major gestures of the sign, after which the glass experts do the complicated filling and electrifying. Taking the 1-day class was one of the great art experiences of my life. You want to work with the glass, not against it, Marvel explains as he taught me to let gravity gently pull a sway into a melted rod, which I would then coax along the design pattern during the 6 to 10 seconds that the tube stayed soft enough to bend. In 4 hours, I got a tour of the shop, a survey of techniques, and enough practice to get a sense of what I was doing. This allowed me to outline in blue and green tubes an acorn about a foot in each direction. I left the place vibrating with excitement. But that was nothing compared to what I felt when I came back to pick up my sign and saw it in the shop, its blue cap and green shell magically, mysteriously glowing. Ooh. And again, we have to fiddle with this little there's so many buttons on this little machine over here. It's hard to decide which how to get the darn thing going and play something. I should just forget it. Leave it alone. Anyway, there are some pictures here. One is a sign that says Raleigh in sort of a reddish letters. And here's one. This is an interesting one. I'll read the caption first. Glasses Nate Schaefer created a reverberating outline of North Carolina. The studio also created the sign for the Orpheum Theater in Oxford, and neon shines all across Raleigh from the Dillon Hotel on the opposite page, that's where it says Raleigh, to the Morgan Street Food Hall and Vidrio Restaurant. So this, what I was looking at was this bluish, sort of a medium blue to whitish blue map of North Carolina, which just kind of goes on and on and on because they get smaller and smaller toward the center, and it just fades off into the distance. It's very fascinating. And then you've got the Orpheum sign. You've got Food Hall and Morgan Street. And then in Vidrio, there's a big fish over the kitchen window. How about Krispy Kreme? When, in the late 1930s, Vernon Rudolph cut a hole in the wall of his wholesale donut business to serve customers lured by the scent of hot fried dough, he opened a window into the secrets of mechanized donut production in Winston-Salem. In the 1980s, another sneak peek in the process came when, rumor has it, a store manager wrote "Hot Donuts Now" in red paint on a spring-loaded window shade, which he'd roll down whenever the donuts were coming fresh out of the fryer. Sales at his store supposedly increased so much that Krispy Kreme installed neon signs, now known as hot lights, in all of its stores. The bright, eye-catching neon allowed customers driving by to the spot where the sweet treats were being made rather than relying solely on their noses. So there's a close-up of some Krispy Kreme donuts, which I just happen to have had within the last week, having gone by the downtown Raleigh store at night and finding out they don't make filled donuts at night. It's just the originals, but that's okay. And here is the Hot Now Krispy Kreme Original Glazed Donut sign. So for those of you who aren't familiar with it, there's a horizontal strip in the middle that says Krispy Kreme Original Glazed. It's yellow against red. And there's a big circle around it, and they can light up the words hot on top and now on the bottom to tell you when they are fresh. Leave the light on. Perhaps nothing symbolizes the American Motor Lodge, which rose in popularity to support a growing wanderlust following World War II, more than the buzz of a glow of a neon sign. Before the age of online bookings, motorists often found a room for the night simply by turning in at those gleaming red letters spelling out vacancy. Luckily, these icons of Americana can still be found at vintage motels from the mountains to the coast. On U.S. Highway 64 in Brevard, the Sunset Motel opened in 1955, and an issue of the Transylvania Times for the same week proudly advertised cold and hot running water in each of its 10 rooms. Across the state, Asheville's Mountaineer Inn sign, Cherokee's Pink Motel sign, and Kinston's Mother Earth Motor Lodge, where I have stayed, are still beacons for weary travelers. So we have the big Sunset Motel, yellow against red sign here. And right now, I don't know when this was taken, it says, "Welcome, renovated, and smoke-free, thesunsetmotel.com. Brevard's Sunset Motel sign, prized for its vintage look, was once featured in a Marlboro ad, as well as a music video by Western North Carolina singer-songwriter Nikki Talley. And there is a pretty old car here, so I don't know if it just happens to be pulled out for the picture because the rim on the roof of the motel is a kind of a dark pink, and this car is pink and white. Not quite sure what it is. I can't tell, but it's an old car, 50s vintage, a station wagon, I think, and it has something piled on top of it. So it may be an old photo, or it may just be made to look like an old photo. Then we've got the Mountaineer Inn, and the E, well, this is this is curious. I'm not familiar with it, but the N's, the E's, and the R in Mountaineer are all, and I was going to say the I is backwards. Of course it isn't. They're all backwards. So it says I-N-N, but the two N's are backwards. Vacancy, however, is spelled in the proper sequence. And underneath it says, with a touch of modern. And there's a great big hillbilly standing with a shotgun and bare feet and jeans that are ragged at the bottom, standing over the sign. The Pink Motel has Tinkerbell, or somebody like Tinkerbell, on top, done in neon. And then there's the Mother Earth Motor Lodge in Kinston. And overleaf, the Don Gibson Theater in Shelby. The people of Shelby were in awe of the State Theater when it opened in 1939, hardly believing that something so modern could be in their small town. The theater was a state-of-the-art Art Deco-style building with sweeping, curved walls and novelties like padded seating and forced air heating and cooling. The towering marquee listed first-run films, including hits like The Big Sleep with Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall, Road to Morocco with Bob Hope and Bing Crosby, and Disney's The Jungle Book. The theater operated for half a century before shutting down in the 1980s, and the marquee remained dark for nearly three decades while the building sat dormant. In 2009, the venue was renovated and reopened as a concert hall and occasional movie theater. The sign was restored to its original glory with the addition of the name Don Gibson, a Shelby-born country music star. So here it is. It's outlined in three rows of white neon. Theater is in red against the black background, and Don Gibson is maybe the same color red, maybe a little lighter. And Don Gibson is also on a marquee out front. Says they host a variety of musical acts and sometimes screens classic movies from 1939, the year the venue opened, like The Wizard of Oz, Stagecoach, and Gone with the Wind. First-run movies continue to be shown in the Gem Theater on the opposite page, just like they were when it was opened in 1936. And for the Gem in Kannapolis, it says, before televisions were commonplace, the 1939 Gem Theater was a primary source of entertainment in Kannapolis. Live acts featuring entertainers like Western star Roy Rogers and his horse Trigger would kick off the show. Then the screen would roll down and the picture would begin. Movies were promoted with elaborate displays staged around the marquee, like military jeeps parked outside when war pictures were shown. In 1942, the back portion of the Art Deco building was destroyed by a fire, but the facade, lobby, and projection room were saved. And the marquee remains almost identical to the way it appeared in 1936. While modern companies have proposed changing out the neon lights for more cost-effective LED bulbs, General Manager Steve Morris believes that nothing can replicate the brilliant color and the nostalgic buzz of real neon. We've seen so many other things in Kannapolis change and go away, he says, but this is one place that has been frozen in time. And here is the Gem, a nice stone. Look, I guess it's a stone front building. I can't tell whether it's stone or metal. It's so smooth and shiny. And we have the marquee coming out. It says theater. And they were showing Cinderella at this particular point. You know, those letters that you stick up on the white background. And then G-E-M in green letters on a purplish background stand on a vertical sign above the marquee. Now we have South 21 Drive-In in Charlotte. Like the neon signs that once drew hungry customers to drive-in restaurants across the state, the days of driving up, honking your horn, and having a car hop appear at your window have all but disappeared. But at South 21, customers find a neon sign promising all of that, plus Superboy, a double hamburger with mustard, onions, lettuce, and tomato. Owner George Husseides along with his longtime customers, sees the sign at his 1950s burger joint as a symbol of the restaurant's longevity and of the 50s and 60s. So the sign, and it's one of those, for those of you who can remember, the back of the sign kind of tilts back at about a 20-degree angle, and then it rolls around the corner to the top. So it leans back, but then it's as if it's hanging a flag down, and that's where it says in neon, 21 South, curb service. And then above it is a regular old sign, which says home of the Superboy hamburger. Ratcliffe's Flowers in Charlotte. In a city that's ever-changing, the Ratcliffe's Flowers sign has shown on Tryon Street for nearly a decade. Crafted by Ernest Grady, a statewide pioneer in the art of neon, the Art Deco-style sign was installed in 1929 on a new building commissioned by Lewis Ratcliffe Sr. during Charlotte's building boom. Neon signs continued to pop up in the area, but as a change continued into the 1960s, many businesses agreed to remove them in favor of more modern designs. Lewis Ratcliffe Jr., who had taken over his father's shop, refused to take his down. At that time, it was just another sign that downtown business associations wanted gone, says Christopher S. Lawing, founder of the Charlotte Signs Project, which documents and preserves the city's historic signage. Today, it is hailed as a beautiful piece of cultural art. Ratcliffe's closed in the 1980s, but the sign remained. In 2000, the building was relocated, and the sign was later removed, restored, and reinstalled at 431 South Tryon Street, where it was honored with a relighting ceremony. So here it is. It hangs on a black metal post, Ratcliffe's Flowers, and has around the end, it has little two sets of two neon tubes that wrap around the end of the sign in white and give a little flavor, a little flair at the end of Ratcliffe's and Flowers on both sides of the sign with their white against the blue background. And Ratcliffe's is all in pink and Flowers is all in green. And here's Bridges Barbecue Lodge, specializing in barbecue for over 75 years. Bridges and Barbecue are definitely in neon. They're in Shelby. At Red Bridges Barbecue Lodge in Shelby, a neon sign has long attracted those seeking a taste of down-home North Carolina. The sign was installed in the 1960s, shortly after Red Bridges passed away, leaving the business in the hands of his wife, Little. Red and Little are gone, but customers know when they see that neon sign that they're getting barbecue made the exact same way as when Red started the restaurant more than 70 years ago. Pit cooked overnight over a bed of hickory and oak coals, topped with a ketchup and vinegar-based sauce. Across North Carolina, neon signs are icons of our long-standing barbecue joints. Whether you're passing through Lexington on Main Street and spot the red all-caps lettering on the barbecue center sign, or cruising down U.S. Highway 158 in Weldon to catch a glimpse of the loopy green Ralph's lettering surrounded by a playful pig. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll join us again next week. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.